Chapter 3. Sonata in Oops Minor. The double doors lead into another ballroom, this one even bigger than the first. The floor is shining marble, and my steps echo off walls paneled with mirrors. Fragments of light dance everywhere, thrown by the prisms dangling from crystal chandeliers overhead. The place is empty, except for four people sitting behind a table at the far wall, two women and two men. They watch me silently as I cross the wide open space. Three of them are wearing tuxedos, and the woman on the end is wearing an elegant black dress. Each one wears a golden maestro pin. It takes a century for me to reach them. Their faces are completely blank, eyes fixed on me. I feel like they can see every speck of dirt on my clothes, every bad and unmusical thought I've ever had. Now I know exactly why those kids before me left looking like they'd learned the time and place of their own deaths. All except Jai, of course. How had he handled these four stony-faced maestros and still come out smiling? And here I am with my muddy clothes and frizzy hair and no sheet music. For a minute, I can only stare at the floor, face on fire, wondering if I could get my audition fee refunded if I left now. But then I tighten my jaw. I didn't come all this way to chicken out. Anyway, it doesn't matter that my clothes are messy and my sheet music is burned to a crisp, or that I've never played in front of a real maestro before. Like Jai said, they like confidence. I lift my chin and remind myself to breathe.
242,
says the maestro on the end, a grumpy-looking man with more hair in his mustache than on his head. I nod. In front of me is a small table, and on it sits a clay pot. Leaning over, I see it's filled with dirt, and on top of the dirt rests a small acorn. There's a music stand, too, but it's not like I have anything to put there.
Excellent. Another flute.
Mustache man sighs, as if there are a million other things he'd rather be doing.
You have before you an acorn and ample soil. I trust our expectations are clear. Now, what piece will you be performing?
Handel's
Speak up! We can't hear you when you squeak like that.
I clear my throat. Handel's Flute Sonata in E minor. My hands shake like they're made of paper. Wiping them on my jeans, I stand and take two deep breaths before placing the silver barrel to my chin, my bottom lip lightly resting against the lip plate. Three of the maestros stare with flat eyes, but the lady in the dress gives me a small, encouraging smile. The instructions on Mistwick's audition website had been vague. Prepare a healing spell, it had said, and the rest of the instructions would be made clear at the audition itself. Now it all makes sense. Healing spells also double as growth spells if you know how to alter the tempo just a bit. And I've had a lot of practice with that, helping Mrs. O'Grady in her vegetable garden. But I'd counted on having my sheet music with me. I've played the spell 100 times, but right now, I can't even think of the first note. Panicking, I press down and blow, producing a high, smooth note, E flat. It's the right one. After that, it all comes back to me. The notes, the tempo, the melody. My fingers dance over the keys. Handel's Flute Sonata in E minor. It starts out slow and steady. Adagio. Notes marching in an orderly line, smooth as glass. I take my time, settling into a series of rolling measures, my upper half swaying as I lean into the music and feel each note. As the third rule of music craft states, with all your soul do play your part, for magic rises from the heart. That's why recorded spells don't work. They might sound nice, but magic comes from the musician, not the music. The notes and instruments are just how you control it. And that means you have to stay focused and keep your attention on the spell, or you won't produce so much as a curl of magic. It takes your whole heart and soul to pull off a proper spell. And a good musician knows controlling your thoughts is just as important as controlling your breath and fingers. sweet tones turn into curls of green light and swirl through the air. Most of them, directed by my focus on the acorn, drift to the pot and sink into the soil. The magic smells like water on leaves, a rainy day in spring. The first movement goes perfectly. I transition into the second, picking up the tempo, allegro. Now my fingers begin to race, notes trilling and fluttering. And the magic changes accordingly, the green curls of light shortening into brief bursts, drifting like dandelion fluff through the air and hovering around the acorn. The longer I play, the more lights come to life, until my skin and the table and the flute are illuminated with dancing green sparks. The chandeliers overhead reflect the lights until the whole room glitters, the mirrored walls reflecting endless Amelias. Finally, the acorn begins to jiggle, then splits into two pale halves as a tender white shoot pries its way free. Growth spells are one of my favorites. They're so full of hope and happiness. Seeing the little plant burst into life, straining to reach for the sun, makes my soul expand. I risk a quick glance up, just as the sprout begins to unfurl its first leaves, and I see the maestros watching just as grimly as before. They don't look too impressed. Mustache even looks a little bored. My heart squeezes. What if I'm doing something wrong? What if I misunderstood the instructions or picked the wrong spell? What if they don't like my technique? Or what if they decided the moment they saw my muddy shoes and my chicken poop jeans that I'm not Mistwick material? Squeet! The jarring note splits the air like a scream, and my whole body contracts, my fingers momentarily freezing on the keys. The fragile shoot shivers in its pot. No, 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 no! Desperately, I keep playing as if the bad note never happened. I don't dare look at the maestros. But then I hit a wrong note, and another squeaky A, and sweat runs down my face and my neck and slimes my palms. I keep picturing their stony expressions, especially Mustache Man, frowning at me and thinking, "Who is this weirdo? She doesn't belong here. Send in the real musicians." Suddenly, I hear a shout from the maestros, and I look up. And I'm so startled by what I see that I stop playing altogether. The green motes of light all die, as suddenly as they appeared, like startled fireflies. I stand frozen in horror in the following silence, gaping at Mustache Man. Or rather, at the mustache. It has sprouted so much hair that it now hangs to his belly. He could braid it and toss it over his shoulder if he wanted. He could string it between two trees and use it for a hammock. By letting my mind get distracted, I lost control of the magic, and it fixed on the maestro instead of the acorn. The growth spell worked, at least, just not on the right thing. The other three maestros gape at the man, who is slowly lifting his ridiculously long mustache with both hands. Then his eyes rise to me, shiny with rage. "Young lady," says the maestro in the dress, "finish your spell, please." Shaking, I raise my flute and play the last few measures, but it's too late to undo the damage. The sprout had put out three leaves, but that last awful note had not only broken the spell, it had twisted it completely. In response, the shoot bent sideways at a 90-degree angle, so the whole thing is now shaped like an upside-down L. The leaves droop sadly, as if heartbroken. Kind of like how my heart is breaking. I lower my flute and stare numbly.
"Somebody bring me a pair of scissors,"
bellows Mustache Man.
"And you,"
he points at me,
"get out of here."
I'm sorry, I say. "I can start over, or I can play a trimming spell and fix it. Please, you'll see."
"We've seen plenty,"
he growls, pulling more and more of his mustache up and onto the table. It coils there like a pile of brown yarn.
"Where are those scissors?"
I'm still blinking at them, please gathering in my throat as I hear the doors behind me open and the woman outside runs in and slams a pair of scissors onto the table. Then she pulls me away by my elbow. I don't even have time to put away my instrument. I can only bundle my flute under one arm, grab my case in the other, and shuffle quickly after her. "Wait, please," I shout. "I can do better, I promise." I'm pushed through the doors to find myself staring at the other kids, who watch with wide eyes. Tears run down my cheeks, and a pressure builds inside my chest. I can't breathe.
2, 4, 3,
the woman yells. I run through the ballroom and into the lobby, out the front doors, bursting into the sunny parking lot. Gran shouts my name, but I don't stop. I just want to get as far away from here as possible, back to the train station, back home. "I'm sorry, Mom," I whisper, doubling over as a sob rises in my lungs. "I tried, but I..." The words stick in my throat. "I guess I'm nothing like you after all."